I am a little overwhelmed, I have to be honest. I was not expecting so many people to show up. Thank you. My name is Kemi Acapo, and I am running to be your next counselor for Town Ward. My decision to run for council is inspired by all of you, and I'm really grateful for your support. When I was about 7 years old, my school organized a fundraiser for a local orphanage. I got really excited about it. I signed up, I got all my pledges. It was a walkathon, and I wanted to compete with my brother. I was like, I'm gonna raise more money than my brother. So my mom saw that, and she was really excited to see how engaged I was and how much I was really willing to provide support and fundraise for this orphanage. But my mom said to me, she said, Kemi, you know, we don't just provide community care once a year. It's something that we do year round.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to episode 16 now of Corner of Hunter and George. That was just a insight from when she ran for council in 2018. One of her first campaign stops, if not the first, for Kemi Acapo. That is our guest on today's show. I had a really great discussion with her early today, and my questions were kind of bungling from political to non-political to perhaps not doing my homework enough on a few of them. But overall, it was quite insightful. And sadly, Kemi Acapo for our town ward is not going up for re-election in November of this year. And at the moment, I believe there are four candidates up for that ward at the moment, which elects two, by the way. But that being said, don't expect her to stay silent and in the background just because she's faced a number of negative trolls and various deviants of society that come out well on social media, human or otherwise. And I hope you enjoy today's episode. I try to give her a grasp of, get her grasp of how she feels about Peterborough's art scene and perhaps some of her few of her favorite artists of any medium. We discuss her various likings. You'll find she seems to be quite athletic in some ways. Her background of being like someone who's been here 18 years now in Peterborough. And I think has a pretty good perspective on the city, a lot more than I do. And, yeah, I'll be looking forward to see whenever it comes out. Perhaps it won't be for several months yet, but exactly what her plans will be post-election. And she may even be a presence in the election, from what I'm getting from her. So, anyway, this is for Corner of Hunter and George. We are available. I'm working on a linked tree that I hopefully will have up sometime this week. But anyway, you can find us on Spotify and Apple. Please subscribe. That's all I ask. You can give me as many negative reviews as you want. I don't care if it's a 1-star or 2-star. I know that affects me badly in some algorithmic sense, but when you don't have any, one is better than none. And please subscribe and follow along as you get various members of this community, a lot of them from our art scene. Sometimes I interview people beyond our community, but overall, trying to give you just kind of a vantage point of each guest that's on here. That's what I want to do. Just their vantage point on life. And here we go today with Kemi Acapo. Can't believe that name was mispronounced so often.
These dual tasking things.
But yeah, I get that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for making time for this. I really appreciate it.
Sure, no problem. Have we met before?
We have never met.
Okay.
I must admit, I was reading, you've lived in Peterborough 17 years. And yeah, I believe I've read that anyway. And yeah, if there was a new Peterborough center of something, new citizen center,
new Canadian center,
yeah, something like that. Yes, as opposed to that, yeah, I wouldn't need the new Canadian center, but new Peterborough center, I might need that. I've been here technically. I mean, it's too complicated to explain. I've had kind of an inadvertent relationship with Peterborough for a number of years, but I've only technically lived here this month. It'll be a year. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I see what you're saying.
I have not even been around for your whole term in office. So,
okay. Well,
yes, I've probably been around for the worst parts of it, but yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, no, yes, I don't believe we've ever met, but,
okay. Well, it's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. I'm quite honored to actually. Yeah, while I've definitely, come to read a lot about you and, find a lot of interesting things and fascinating things about you. Mostly this podcast tries to center like on the art scene in Peterborough particularly, but
yes.
Sometimes I go outside of that. So yeah.
Yeah. I listened to your interviews with Sam Tweedle. I'm going to mess up her name. Karma Saeed.
Yeah.
And, oh gosh, the head coach of, Electric City Football Club. So I got a bit of an idea.
Yes. Okay.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm going to first start, I'll go kind of in and out of politics, if you don't mind. That might make kind of a messy kind of combination.
It's your podcast.
Yeah. So as long as it's not bothering you, but I'm going to start with that. I'm sure it's been done by many people, but I'm going to center on council.
Okay.
How many times has, Kemia Capo been mispronounced by council?
I stopped taking count.
Okay. Has it still been happening in recent months, or is that?
Yeah, not so much by council members, more by staff. Which is just as frustrating, but you know, I feel like I made my point. I'm just gonna let it go because I don't want that to be the central focus of.
Well, I understand. I just find it a little head scratching because I look at your name and, you know, just coming from an anglicized Canadian monolingual perspective, I can put your name together. And I'm only mentioning him because he was born in Nigeria like you were. But if I was looking at Masai Ujiri, you know, if I didn't know who he was, you know, I would have more struggle with that name, a lot more struggle with that name than yours. So yeah.
And I don't mind, like I have no issues with people saying my name incorrectly if it's the first time they've ever encountered it, right? Like I recognize that I live in a country where my name is not common. So if you mess it up the first couple times, no biggie. But if I've actually taken the time to sit you down and teach you how to say my name and yet you continue to mispronounce it, that's when it becomes an issue for me. And that's what the situation was.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, we won't go into it further, but that almost sounds a bit dark in a way. But anyway, now one way you kind of define yourself, you have many identities, I know, but one way you define yourself, like go by your website, is you're an active cyclist. So have you been able to keep that up in your like as a politician? Like, you know, I'm sure you've had a lot of demands or time taken up by other things, but yeah.
Yeah. So for the first year and a bit, so as you mentioned, I've lived in Peterborough for, well, it'll be 18 years end of this year. And for the first, oh gosh, what's 18 minus three? First little bit, I did not own a car. So I was entirely reliant on Peterborough Transit or taxis or walking or, you know, whatever. And in my first year of being elected, that was still the case. I did not own a car. I chose not to. So I managed to do my first year in a bit without a car. And I would cycle to council meetings, to other engagements and events that we had. I almost tried to bike to the airport for a meeting once, and I drew the line at that. I was like, oh, that might be pushing it. So yeah, I am an avid cyclist, and I was able to maintain that mostly for council. But then I did purchase a car in January of 2020, which, you know, if I'd known, I would not have, because then COVID hit us 3 months later and I barely touched my car. So I do still cycle, not as often. It's more for recreational purposes now. Unless it's like warm weather months, and then I do cycle a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so is it, with a car, is it still one of your main like areas? I know you're saying you do it recreationally, but do you still use it as like a pragmatic form of transport?
Yeah, definitely. If it's like, if I'm biking to a meeting or like if I have a meeting somewhere that's in person, which is rare these days, or if I need to go to City Hall to pick up something or go to NCC, which is the other place that I work, and I don't need to like carry like loads of stuff, then yeah, I will cycle. If I'm going to the grocery store, I'll bike there. If I'm going to a friend's house, I'll bike there. It's good. I mean, kind of like, you know, it kills multiple stones, or I don't know, what a weird phrase. There's lots of things that happen. So I'm getting that physical activity, which I love, getting that fresh air, which is important and good for mental health. You know, I'm not spending money on gas, and, you know, with gas prices these days, saving money is good. There's a climate change impact. And it's just fun. I love cycling. Yeah. It's just so much more fun than driving.
Well, yes. And you picked a place, unlike, say, if you had picked, say, I don't know, Vaughan. You've picked a place in Ontario that's kind of adapt for cycling.
Yes.
So in many ways.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. And now another thing I've noticed that you seem to have a liking for is soccer. Like as either a fan or a player, I honestly don't know, but how much do you love soccer besides just Electric City FC on its own?
I love it enough to call it football.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay.
I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, I grew up watching it with my brothers. So I've got three older brothers, and you know, the weekend would come around and we'd gather by the TV and whatever game was on. Didn't care who was playing, we would just sit and watch it. So from a very young age, I watched it and loved it. I played a little bit in high school. I'm not very good. And I play recreationally. And by recreationally, I mean like very recreationally. Like,
okay,
everybody wins. Everybody gets a participation sticker at the end. Mm-hmm. but yeah, mostly my relationship with football is mostly watching. I mostly watch English Football League. The Premier League is my main thing, and then of course the World Cup. When it happens, it's great.
Do you have a particular team you're loyal to in the Premier
League? I have yes and no. I have two teams, because typical me, I can't just pick one. So my sort of like my lead team is Liverpool. And then my second choice team is Tottenham Hotspurs.
Okay.
So, yeah. I was watching the Tottenham game earlier today.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have a favorite player from others or players?
I respect a lot of the players, even the ones who aren't on my teams. Mm-hmm. But Son from Tottenham is like particularly near and dear to my heart. He's just like so happy, and so he just seems so kind. And I've actively not read anything about him because I don't want to know if there's anything about him I don't want to know, but
right.
I just want to know him from like his Instagram and how he plays on the field. And I'm a huge fan.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, as I'm getting at, you're an active like season ticket holder of our local club. So
yes, yeah, so yes, I'm super excited about this.
Yeah. So I believe yesterday the women won. So
they did. Yeah, 1-0, I think. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So
yeah,
that's definitely something I'm sure you agree with me has added a lot to our city sports scene, city culture in general. Yeah.
Yes. 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 Yeah.
Now, of course, you first came here 18 years ago, I should say now, as an international student from Nigeria. Now, I have just not from an outside perspective. I haven't been in school for a number of years, of course, but I've just various job placements I've had. I've seen a lot of challenges that international students face these days. Just these ridiculous costs that are put on them that the universities and colleges seem dependent on. And also the circumstances of COVID and everything. Do you feel they face, was it that challenging when you were an international student, or do you feel like it's like 10 to the power of 3 worse? Like
That's a good question. I mean, I think the challenges of being an international student are, you know, the fundamental challenges are still the same. I started in 2005, so tuition fees back then were a lot less than they are now. I actually looked it up like last week because I was talking to someone about it, and I was like quite genuinely shocked about how high they've gone. But comparatively to, you know, domestic students, international students' fees have always been quite high because we don't have a government subsidizing it, right? Mm-hmm. But the fees have just gone up, in my opinion, to a ridiculous amount. And I do think that is, you know, it's one added sort of setback for international students is the exorbitant fees. In terms of like immigration challenges, I would also say that in some ways it's gotten easier. It's more online now. Back in my day, you had to fill out paper applications, and there was no really good way of communicating with the IRCC, which is the federal government agency that's in charge of immigration. So immigration has really like made the process smoother than it was back in my day. And I know for a lot of international students, sort of like the one of the things that they look forward to when they come here is the potential to stay as permanent residents. And back in my day, the process to do that was a lot more difficult than it is now. So that bit has gotten a bit easier, but it is more expensive now. And it still, in some ways, favors people who come from specific areas of the world over others. So I mean, I could talk about immigration all day long, so you may have to cut me off. But sort of like the lived reality of being an international student now, I think, is a lot more challenging in some aspects than it was back in my day. And international students always have, you know, they've got their studies just like any domestic student has, but then they always have like the immigration piece in the back of their mind. And it actually, it can be quite stressful if, you know, if your immigration status is sort of in flux, or, you know, you're at risk of losing it. You know, you've got, that takes up quite a lot of mental space, and you're not able to really focus on your studies as a result of that.
Right. And I'll even add a third dimension, again, coming admittedly from an outside perspective, but I've seen a lot have to take on these, like for the sake of financial survival, these god-awful jobs that a lot of the rest of us don't want to do. And you know, being paid sometimes below minimum and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen examples in Peterborough where that's happened. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it 100% happens. They get taken advantage of. You know, housing as well is a huge challenge for international students. I mean, housing in general is a challenge for anyone now in Peterborough, but particularly for international students, oftentimes, you know, not oftentimes, I should say, but it's not unheard of to have many, you know, like it's a 4-bedroom house and you've got like 16 people living there because they can't afford to live elsewhere.
That is something we could go on. We could stop right now and just do about that right now, immigration and international students. But anyway, I'm glad we addressed that anyway. Now, just back to being on council, just as a municipal politician in general, I find generally ever since Mike Harris in Ontario, a lot has been downloaded on the municipalities, but their hands are really tied. They don't have power that they had back when I grew up. And how many times have you just sort of felt like you as a council as a whole have had your hands tied, either by what provincial mandate is, by whatever any outside consultant or auditor wants, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a good point that you make, and I think a lot of people are not aware of that or don't realize sort of to the extent how much the province has a reach and what municipalities do or can't do. It seems like almost any sort of decision a municipality can make can be overridden by the province. So, which, you know, depending on who's in power, may be in your favor or may not be in your favor. But it happens a lot. You know, we depend on the province and the federal government for a lot of funding. So if the federal government, you know, makes all these announcements, yes, you're getting money, and then all of a sudden there's an election, and then the new government is, you know, nope, we're not giving you what was promised to you. And then all of a sudden you have to reevaluate your plans. Do we still go ahead with certain projects? And if so, where do we get that funding from if the province isn't going to be part of it? Planning stuff. So the Planning Act is a provincial act, a provincial law that really, you know, gives a lot of direction as to what you can or cannot do. And, you know, if as a city council, you choose to go ahead with a certain project or you choose not to go ahead, that developer can, you know, essentially go to the province and get your decision reversed one way or the other. Same with the Police Act. So there's very few things that a municipality can just set that the province can't just come in and be like, actually, we don't agree with you. We're going to change it. And that can be quite frustrating because then it's almost like, well, what's the point? Like, what's the point of me being here if you're just going to come in and tell us what to do anyways? Then why don't you just do this yourself? And then sort of the flip side is when the province downloads stuff to you that really, as a municipal government, it's like, should we be the ones responsible for this? Or should it be the province that is still the lead? Like, I still, you know, for example, housing, affordable housing, that's been downloaded to municipalities. And to some extent, I understand that. But it almost seems like the province has washed their hands of it and said, we'll give you money, but then you got to figure out the rest. Rather than looking at it as like a provincial issue where like housing, particularly now affordable housing, is bonkers. And to expect each municipality to solve it in silos, I think is quite unfair.
And I was going to give just one example of this safe site at the old Greyhound station. That
the consumption and treatment site?
Yes. And like took forever to have provincial backing of that. And that's what was required. So you had everything in place. Even the federal government had things in place, but it couldn't go through without. Now, I was reading your sort of message or epilogue saying how you're not going to run in the upcoming election
statement.
On your site. And your poem you quoted there from, I believe, Michaela Robin. And so what I was getting from that, you tell me if I'm wrong. And I was also reading what you were putting forth in now. But you as a whole, you're not just saying you're not running, but you're maybe kind of done with politics in general, at least for the near future. Is that a correct way of interpreting that?
Yes and no. I'm done with politics in terms of being the candidate or being the representative. I'm not done with politics in terms of interacting with it as a constituent or, you know, being an activist, that kind of thing. I don't think that I will ever stop being involved in politics in that regard. But in terms of being the candidate, being the face, being the representative, I am taking a step back, at least for the next little, you know, while. I don't know how long, maybe forever, who knows. But yes, that is correct. Yeah.
Okay. Right. And again, back to your 18 years in Peterborough, you know more than I do, a lot more than I do. What do you love about the city the most? Just
to, oh my gosh.
Well, I guess whatever comes to your mind first at the moment.
I don't know if there's anything that I love the most, but I mean, the first thing that always pops to mind is sort of the physical landscape of Peterborough. Mm-hmm. I love how much green space we have. I love that we have a river running through our city and a lake. And I just love where it's situated. Like, I feel like Peterborough physically situated in such a great spot. The Carthas, proximity to Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, and then all like cottage country. Like, it's like the physical space of Peterborough. I love it. Don't think you can get that anywhere else. Maybe, but I haven't been to anywhere else that's made me feel that way.
Yeah.
I love the people of Peterborough. There's something about Peterborough that's very like, we're gonna do this ourselves. And I appreciate that because, yeah, I don't know. There's just something about that where it's like, you know what? Like with Electric City Football Club, we could be like, well, we're close enough to Toronto, so we kind of have our own team in Toronto. But it's like, no, we're going to create our own club here. Like, why not? And I love that. And there's lots of like made in Peterborough solutions for issues that are facing other communities as well. But we've come up with a Peterborough way of responding to that. So, and the people are the ones who drive that. So I really love the people of Peterborough because they're very like, well, here's an issue. Like, okay, what am I going to do about it? Which I appreciate. I love the culture here for the most part. the culture is shifting a bit, which is, I can comment on that later perhaps, but the culture, particularly the arts and food scene here, my goodness, like I think for a community of our size, we're definitely punching up in that regard. Yeah. And again, I think because even though we are close to Toronto, Montreal and Ottawa, we're far enough away that it's like, I don't want to drive to Toronto every weekend to go see a concert or a band. So, let's create venues here where that can happen. And I love that. And there's enough to do here to keep you interested and occupied. But it's also nice to get away from the city every once in a while.
Again, those last points you're just saying, yeah, there are places much bigger in population than Peterborough who I don't think have close to having one iota of the amount of like kind of self-made or culture that has kind of existed here for ages. Yes, like you said, it is starting to change a bit now, but that definitely has been around for a while. Now mm-hmm. to cast sort of a dark cloud. What have you found, like, I guess, especially in the last few years, what have you found the most distressing for yourself?
I mean, I've a number of things. Mm-hmm. I found there's a lot of systemic issues that are happening globally, but I'll focus on Canada. And Peterborough seems to be be bearing the brunt of sort of like all the hardest of those things. So we have the highest overvalued like housing market in Canada. And we also have one of the highest unemployment rates in Canada. So those two alone is like the recipe for not success. And then we also have one of the highest rates of like deaths by opiate poisoning. And our housing, I mentioned we also have one of the lowest vacancy rates, at least in Ontario. So you put all those systemic issues in one city and you get what we have here. Peterborough was the city of Peterborough, relied a lot on sort of these big heavy industries. There was GE, Quaker, and we still have Quaker, thankfully, but GE has left. And I really feel like GE like slowly downsized and then physically when it left, it did create quite a big vacuum in our city that we're still trying to find ways to fill in. But I mean, the days of like big companies like GE are gone. So we need to figure out how do we pivot and how do we
yeah, how do we pivot from that and move sort of forward? But yeah, I feel like Peterborough, unfortunately, is sort of like we've received the worst of the worst in terms of systemic issues here. And you see that every day, you know, there's like the sort of obvious like homelessness that you see when you walk down the street. There's the obvious like drug use that you also see as well. But a lot of that is hidden. And I don't think people realize how much homelessness and opioid use is hidden. How do I say this? I've supported a lot of people who go to like AA meetings and NA meetings, and I'm going to respect anonymity, but I think people would be surprised by like who's going to those meetings. And it's like, it's your doctors, it's your, you know, your pharmacist, it's your, the guy that mows your lawn, it's your teachers. So it's people who like are presenting and, you know, they don't necessarily fit the bill of what most people think of when they think of homelessness or people with addictions. And there's a lot of that is hidden. So I actually think the issues are worse than we think, because we see the people on the streets, and that to me is very distressing. But it's a larger issue than that. It's a larger issue than just like lack of housing and lack of affordable housing. Don't quite know how to address it, but there's a lot of people who have lived trauma in Peterborough, and I'm sure across the world, of course. And dealing with that, I think really that is the root of a lot of issues that we're facing. But yeah, sort of going back to your question, what do I find the most distressing? It's all these systemic issues coming into play here. But for me, you know, if I had to sort of highlight one, it is, you know, the homelessness issue, and how that relates to the opioid issue as well. But not everyone who's homeless is, you know, uses drugs, and not everybody who uses drugs is homeless. So I think that's something that we don't talk about enough. And they're linked, and I don't always, while there are linkages, I think it's important to remind folks that just because somebody is homeless doesn't mean that they're a drug user. And so what if they are? Like, that doesn't make them less of a human being and deserving of care. Yeah,
no, totally agree. And I'd also argue there's another element, I think, of what I, believe it or not, I think I read in the Examiner not too long ago about how there's our hidden homeless. Like, yes, there's the obvious of those carrying shopping carts down the street, yeah, or camping out on my walks in Jackson Park. But mm-hmm. there's those who, you know, they seem to be doing what I'm doing. They're shopping at the grocery store. They're, mm-hmm. You know, doing their daily tasks, but they don't have a place to go to at the end of the day.
Yeah, or there are like people who are couch surfing from, you know, house to house to house. And mm-hmm. yeah, there's different kinds of homelessness as well. Yeah.
Now back to more positive thing. So you came into your term as counselor from your NCC experience, New Canadian Center. And what I'm getting from what you said earlier, are you still involved with them? But anyway, my overall question is really, what have you loved most about that experience? Like, what have you gained from that experience with
experience NCC? Of being a counselor or working at the New Canadian Center?
No, with New Canadian Center.
Oh, okay. So yes, I do still work there. So I never not worked there. mm-hmm. So I started there in 2014, and I'm still working there, happily employed there full time. Great organization, absolutely amazing organization. And you know, slightly biased, but I think the work that we do is good work. And I'm proud to be associated to it. I've learned a lot from, you know, being a staff member. I mean, I started off as a volunteer there and then became a staff member there. And it's interesting to me to see how newcomers interact with politics. And that's something that I feel has been lacking in Peterborough politics in general, is just the inclusion of newcomer voices and the inclusion of people who don't speak English or who have different points of views. So part of me, part of, you know, sort of my goal as a counselor when I got elected was to bring those voices to the table, and also to, you know, let other newcomers know, like, you can do this too. Like, you know, I'm not special. Mm-hmm. I just happened to lead a life that led me to here. But if this is something that you as a newcomer are interested in, I'm more than happy to talk to people and show them the way. But yeah, working at the New Canadian Center has been quite illuminating for me in a lot of ways. I do try to keep it as separate as possible, though. When I'm wearing my council hat, I'm wearing my council hat. When I'm wearing my NCC hat, I'm wearing my NCC hat. And for the most part, it is fairly easy to do, but there are times where it does intersect in comfortable or less comfortable ways.
Yeah. Right. No, I think it is maybe perhaps, Peterborough's a lot of great organizations, but it perhaps is Peterborough's greatest organization. I've seen many times personally where whoever you've had is volunteering, like having at the library, they have the families in, helping the children read, talking to the mother and things like that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming some of them were the Syrian ones we had in the last few years. And feel they just overall are really good at making people feel welcome and giving them resources and options of what to do when they're here. Yeah.
I mean, that's our goal, right? Like, just mm-hmm. imagine you were to move to a new country, whether it was by choice or not. And likely you don't know anyone there, or maybe you have one friend who lives like on the other side of the country. You know, system navigation, like how do I get about living my life in this new country? And that's essentially at the end of the day what we do. We strive to empower newcomers, and also work with the community as well to ensure that Peterborough becomes a more welcoming place. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now I don't want to get into this Elon Musk taking over Twitter conversation, but you don't like I think quite justifiably don't have the greatest, you didn't have the greatest relation with Twitter before. You've been subject to a lot of harassment and mean trolls and bots, whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, seems like a lot of pretty much every female politician, unless you're someone like Hazel McCallion, are going to get.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel about it now? Like I've, not necessarily in politics, but I've heard from like women in various forms talking about how, like, yes, they went off Twitter for a few years, but they just felt it was a necessity and they still hate it, but they sort of had to go back on and just, mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. just end up just maybe perhaps not caring what other people think, just gaining that sort of strength. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny because I don't remember when I joined Twitter, but it was like earlier on. So I've been on, actually, I think my Twitter account would tell me. Let me just check how long I've been on Twitter. So let me just go to my profile real quick. Okay, 2010. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been 12 years. Yeah, 12 years. And Twitter 12 years ago was a very different place than Twitter 2022.
Yes.
And Peterborough Twitter, there was like, you know, this golden era of Peterborough Twitter, and I can't remember when it was, but it was definitely like an online community, and you know, a lot of people that I know I met initially on Twitter, or I'd heard of them first on Twitter before meeting them in person, so that was really fun, and we had this event called Peter Tweeter Awards, which was meant to be this like lighthearted, funny award's event for people who tweeted in Peterborough. So there was like a, a whole, like, you had to submit nominations. It was a committee that, and then there was a gala of sorts, very informal gala, where awards were given out. And that was just like, it was just pure fun. And it was all rooted in like love of community, love for each other and wanting to support each other. And then, you know, there was some mild controversy around the awards. They got canceled. And after that, you know, a year or two, Twitter just kind of changed. And I it's hard for me to put my finger on it. But all through that time, I was like very active on Twitter. I used to like live tweet city council. I would go to city council meetings and live tweet what was happening. This was before Joelle was doing that. You know, I'd go to different events and live tweet what was happening there. And people like engaged with me on that. And that was super fun. And then, yeah, you know, fast forward to my campaign, you know, I switched my Twitter account to be, you know, still try to be me, but more like campaign related stuff. And now that I'm a counselor, it's weird. I'm trying to find this balance of being still talking about like watching football on Sunday mornings or, and also like, but here's also this policy that was passed that you should be aware of. because I want to try and bring my whole self to my online self. And I both of those things are true. I read policy while the football game is on. But yes, I did leave Twitter, gosh, I guess it was 2021.
Yeah, I believe.
And yeah, just because the volume of vitriol that was being sent my way was just, it was too much and it was impacting my mental health. And there's nothing that says a politician has to be on Twitter. So I said, you know what, I'm going to remove myself from this situation until I can get to a better space mentally where I can deal with it. And that's what I did. So I took a couple months off. I came back. And the vitriol has gone down. It still is there. But it, the sort of like the volume that I'm getting is different. And I'm kind of back to using Twitter the way I used to before, where it's like, you're getting me, right? And parts of me are a counselor and parts of me are, you know, I like funny jokes, so I'm going to retweet those jokes. But I'm not only a counselor. I'm a full human being. I think my Twitter profile says that I contain multitudes. And I want that to be, you know, my Twitter account to be reflective of that. I don't know if that answered your question, but
no,
yeah.
That gives me an idea. Yes. Certainly the idea of like it taking an effect on your mental health, I think is quite important.
Yes. And if you actually, yeah, sorry to cut you off, but
go ahead.
I have noticed the disproportionate levels of, I would say, engagement, whether it's positive or not, that the female politicians have, municipal, like Peterborough, have compared to some of our male counterparts. You know, some of them just straight up don't have Twitter. So that's one thing they don't need to concern themselves with. Mm-hmm. Others do, but they don't use it. But if you're someone like myself or Diane or Kim or Leslie, who, you know, we post regularly. So people, you know, we're sort of top of mind for people. So people, if they have something they want to talk to us about, they will tweet at us. And Twitter by nature is, you know, not always the nicest in terms of how people communicate. And, it, you know, it's hard to read tone over the internet, especially if you don't know the person. But yeah, we do tend to get a lot of messages that are not super positive or kind. So then you have to deal with like, well, then you have to decide, like, do I respond to this? Do I ignore it? How do I know if this person is actually a constituent or is this a troll from another city, you know? And I see it happen to other female politicians across Ontario, and it's very disheartening. There's one account that I quite like called the Sassy Counselor, and they get to say things that I feel like I'm not able to say as an elected official, but I appreciate their presence on the internet.
Well, that's perhaps one freedom you may have in several months. But anyway,
yes.
Now I'm going to just a municipal issue. I was looking at the main story that Peterborough Currents came out with maybe about a week ago or less than, about this kind of dilemma about Peterborough Housing Corporation, how they're about to sell off a bunch of homes that people had lived in. I think in the article, a person had lived in it for about a quarter century for mm-hmm. the purpose of, I guess, getting money for new developments. And this may be an example of like something that the province downloaded on you, because believe it or not, at one time there was provincial public housing. I don't know. What do you feel about overall? I like this. You've said some things about our housing situation, but in specifically this relation that the city of Peterborough has with PHC and the plans of this moving forward.
Yeah, it's I read that article, and it's interesting. So Peterborough Housing Corp is still an entity that remains like a mystery to me. I've had several meetings about it. I've asked a lot of questions, and I still don't quite get it. Mm-hmm. And you know, we are moving away from Peterborough Housing to something called GBE. Oh gosh, I forget what it stands for. But housing is not my main portfolio, so I don't know it as intimately as Councillors Baldwin and Councillors Rial and Clark mm-hmm. Would know. But if and I may be wrong on this, but I believe what is happening is these homes that Peterborough Housing Corp is selling were rent geared to income homes. And when you sign an agreement with the province to provide those, it's either 25 years or 50-year term. And then after that, you are no longer required to do that. And subsidizing rent geared to income homes is very expensive. And you know, everyone's budget lines are getting smaller and tighter. And in order to, I guess, get money in order to continue to provide affordable housing, unfortunately, you got to sell some places. So I think that is what's happening, but I'm not 100% sure. So just being honest about my ignorance around that.
Oh, no, that's all right. That's all right. Situation. Yeah, some of that's a bit of our structure that's been around since Mike Harris. So you cannot carry mm-hmm. a deficit as a municipality, where once that wasn't such a big deal. Now, on our art scene, is there any artist of any medium, and you could say that I'm saying it in plural, that you've sort of discovered in the last several years that you've come to appreciate, like local artists I'm talking about?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. Brooklyn Stormy Hobro, she is a visual artist. She had a I don't even know. I guess it was technically a mural on Hunter Street. So this past summer, when we closed on Hunter Street, she was one of the artists there who painted on the street. Mm-hmm. You know, full disclaimer, she is also a friend of mine. And Tia Kavanaugh as well, also a friend of mine, but an incredible Indigenous artist and Anishinaabe woman. Actually, everyone who did piece of art on the street is a friend of mine. So like, there's a lot of really great visual artists, and you know, Brooklyn also works at Watson and Liu, and if I'm looking around my place, I've got art that I got at Metaphor, which, you know, unfortunately is now closed. I have a work by what's her name, Emma, I think her last name might be Scott, but she's a graphic designer. She helped design. There's a poem that I really love by Maya Angelou called Still I Rise. Mm-hmm. And she helped design it so that it looks pretty. So it's up on my wall. Mm-hmm. I've got Brianna Gosling, as I mentioned. I've got art by someone named Mary Ann Slater. She's not Peterborough-based. She's Marmara-based, mm-hmm. but she did go to Trent, so there is a Peterborough connection. I've got Jackson Creek Press, mm-hmm. And another artist whose name I forget, but she's a Black visual artist. And then there's the music scene, of course. What is her name? She works at that really cool vintage store downtown. Evangeline Gentle. There we go.
Yes.
yes. and there's Mary Kate Edwards. Danny Tarot, who owns the Garnet. Wait, is that the Garnet? No, the Gordon Best. I don't know if he's currently making music, but I have some of his older stuff that I really like. And I'm a huge fan of drag, of the drag scene. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving that the drag scene in Peterborough is popping. So I haven't been to a show in a while, and it's making me upset. I do quite enjoy the drag scene in Peterborough.
Right. Yeah. No, that's an element that's maybe not realized by many, but we have quite a rich drag scene, I believe.
Yes.
In Peterborough. Yes. Quite a great number of great performers. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, maybe instead of talking about your upcoming retirement from council, I should have talked more about what I'm interpreting as your already retirement from Wordle, because I was looking at your stats, and you seem to have done quite well. Like, I don't know how many times you were shaking your phone or anything or in frustration, but you did get one time you got it on the first guess. That's hard.
Yes.
To do. Yes. And yes. So I don't know. Why have you retired, I guess, is what I have to ask, if that's true, what I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess it's a theme now, eh? Stepping away from things. Yeah. No, it just, so like when I first started Wordle, it was like it was a fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd wake up in the morning, and it was a good way to wake up because it would sort of wake my brain up in a gentle, fun way that had no major repercussions in my life. You know, if I didn't get it, I didn't get it, whatever. And I had several group chats, you know, where we'd like all compare like Wordle scores. And then, you know, starting in April, it just started to feel like a chore. And I was like, this is meant to be fun. I'm not having fun anymore. I'm just going to stop doing it. And I haven't stopped completely. I just don't do it on a daily basis. So I'm down to maybe 3 or 4 times a week. If the mood strikes me and I have time, I'll do it.
Okay.
But yeah, it was starting to feel like an obligation as opposed to a fun little brain teaser. So
okay. Yeah. And I guess if it's a source of any anger in your early morning when, like you said, you're supposed to be at peace, that's not...
Yes.
Yes, that's not what it's supposed to do. Well, yeah. I think maybe they do intend it that way, but yes. Okay, you once, you not long ago said something along the lines of how hateful words, acts, and symbolism are a Peterborough reality.
Yes.
Maybe one of those words I added in myself, but which I totally agree with. But I guess I'm getting to the point of, I don't know if you ever felt this way in your whole time, not just in Peterborough, but in Canada, but this Canadian nicety, don't we feel that's a bit of a long time myth that I think lately has been exposing itself, but it's kind of always been there anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the sort of Canada's, oh, I shouldn't say this, but like one of Canada's sort of like claim to fame is like, well, at least we're not America, like we're not United States. Mm-hmm. That's like, sure, yeah, but that doesn't make you like, doesn't mean that you, there's no issues here. And in some ways, I would much prefer overt racism and discrimination as opposed to like, you know, subversive ways and less evident ways, because then at least I know. Because one of the hardest things about it is, you know, the wondering, you know, like somebody says something and you're like, well, what do they mean by that? Was it because of who I am and how I present? Was it just an offhand comment they made with no ill intention behind it? But yeah, Canada and Peterborough is not immune to that. Do I walk down the street? Well, let me put it this way. I'm never not aware that I'm not white in any space. And that I think is just true of anywhere in Canada. I don't think there's anywhere I could go that I would not be aware of that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. But it's, Peterborough has gotten better, but there's, you know, oftentimes where I go somewhere and I am the only something, whether it's mm-hmm. the only woman, only visible person of color. And it's exhausting, you know, it's exhausting always being the only one, because then all of a sudden you're expected to, you know, speak for millions of people mm-hmm. Who have not given you permission to speak on their behalf. People make, you know, comments towards you that are either out of willful ignorance or, you know, legitimate ignorance. It wasn't uncommon for me to walk around Peterborough and see, you know, swastikas just sort of plastered around town. I remember when I used to live on Hunter Street, there was a guy who had a car, and he had painted a swastika on it, mm-hmm. and he used to park in front of my house, and that was, you know, not the greatest experience. I've had things yelled at me from cars. I've had stuff thrown at me. Not so much recently. I mean, but also I've been mostly staying at home. And then, you know, with the pandemic, I think there's definitely an increase, but I think it's also like it was always here, and where people are just being a little bit more vocal about it. And it's all sort of tied into like mandates and yeah, it's, how do I say this? I don't know. It's no longer like a standalone thing. It's usually connected to something else. I don't really know what my point is, but yes, Peterborough does have, I would say has an issue with racism, but not any more than any other, like Toronto also has issues with racism, Montreal, Ottawa. So we're just another city in Canada that has an issue. So I don't think Peterborough is particularly more, you know, racist or discriminatory than another city. And sort of on the flip side, Peterborough is also super welcoming and very, like, there's lots of great people here who are, you know, very welcoming, want to help newcomers, and are also actively like trying to unlearn, you know, things that they were taught that were not true. And I haven't even started talking about like Indigenous people and sort of like their relation to this part of the place that we call Peterborough. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, no, I would argue, maybe minus what you were just saying about our Indigenous people, which, yeah, that could be a whole few hours of conversation right there. Mm-hmm. But I'd say a lot of the dark sides of Peterborough are not unique to Peterborough in any way.
Yes.
But a lot of the things we're pointing out is the positives, like our art scene, the friendliness. I would even mm-hmm. say what this morning when I was coming back from my run, there's this like community garden and you see people sitting down and talking to each other and analyzing the plants and that. You don't see that everywhere you go.
Right.
Those are things that are, I think, are kind of unique to Peterborough.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, I'll just say one thing about my own observations, and I'm not going on any scientific numbers, but number of homeless people, like the ratio that are from like either Curve Lake or somewhere nearby is quite, I find that quite troubling that that's the case, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
It says something more than just about Peterborough. It says something about our federal system as well, and how
yes
we, yeah
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're saying you're saying before your one area of portfolio municipal government, you've not really been that involved with is housing. So what I'm getting from what you've said about other issues, you must have some stake in this, or at least some strong feelings about. So I'll start off with the first one I have on that. Do you have any hope for there's maybe being free transit in Peterborough?
Oh my gosh, I would absolutely love that.
Yes.
The thing is, like, nothing in life is really free. So if you as a user are not paying for it, somebody else is paying for it. Mm-hmm. So in order to fully like have free transit in Peterborough, like we'd need either significant like investment from whether it's the federal, provincial, or municipal government to subsidize that. But mm-hmm. I would love to see free transit everywhere, not just in Peterborough. But I think that would be quite great. Love that.
Okay.
If you've got a couple $1 billion laying around, let me know.
All right. And another thing you said, I'm honestly forgetting the exact details of how you were outlining it, but you wanted to see Jackson Park kind of equated with some sort of Central Park kind of legality or legitimacy. I'm not sure what you meant, but
yeah, no,
what are your hopes for Le Jackson Park? That's kind of what
so that's not at all what I was trying to say. I was all I said was that like Jackson Park was our own Central Park in mm-hmm. terms of like living in a city that has a huge like green space in the middle of it. That's literally mm-hmm. the only comparison I was making. I wasn't trying to say like anything else more than that.
Okay.
And Jackson Park as it is today, I would love to be able to maintain it as is and not have any major changes to it that is, you know, is never negatively going to affect the physical space. I don't want there to be a huge bridge built over it. I don't want there to be trees cut down to make space for housing. I just want to preserve it as is and not make it any worse. Yeah.
No, that is definitely going to be a challenge coming up. So, again, correct me if I'm getting wrong with the details. I think one of your fields of study when you were a Trent University student was English.
And yeah, English literature.
Correct. I know that's yes. going back a bit, but still. Is there a poet you love the most, or poets, we can make it plural. Is there poets you love the most? Like, I guess ones you'd still be reading today or even thinking of.
Right. Yeah. Oh, great question. I'm not really super into poetry, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. In fact, most poetry I don't get.
Okay.
But I do. I mean, I love Maya Angelou. Like, who mm-hmm. who doesn't? And there's Rupi Kaur, I believe that's her name. And I read quite a lot of stuff that, is it Rumi? Is that their name? Whether it's poetry or not, I don't know. But yeah, those would be sort of the three that come straight to mind, but it's not usually a type of written literature that I engage with a lot, poetry.
Okay.
I'm trying to, but it's not really my jam.
Okay. Is there any writer in general that you discovered your university studies that still carries a big kind of influence on you today, in any sense?
Not off the top of my head, I would say, mm-hmm. but I haven't really, I've been so removed from that for a number of years that, mm-hmm. I studied international development studies as well. So, you know, you read Fanon, you read Marx, mm-hmm. you read, mm-hmm. you know, all those lefties. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, their work still is sort of like in the back of my head always. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, what's the name of that author? Pedagogy of the Oppressed.
Right. Oh. Sad, yes.
I'm just gonna look up who wrote it. Paulo Freire.
That's right. I was gonna say yes. I was thinking it had some sort of
And then I also read a lot of works written by my focus on in my English literature as focused as you can get in an undergrad was mostly on post-colonial literature. Mm-hmm. So I read quite a number of works written by, you know, folks who come from countries that were colonized. And I focus primarily on West Africa and the West Indies or the Caribbean, I should say. So, you know, there's Chinua Achebe, who's like quite a famous, well-known Nigerian author, or was, rest in peace. Yeah, folks like that. Yeah.
Okay. Great. So just a couple more questions. One is, I think you said one reason that you're leaving politics is like the struggle you have seeing your family, like
you yes.
drive lots of miles or whatever. So,
yeah.
Whereabouts currently is your like family placed? Where you're having to drive to see them?
So I'm not going to say where they live
the most often. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't say where they live, but it is a 5.5-hour drive from Peterborough. So I'll just say
wow.
that.
Wow. Yes.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a long drive. And when you're trying to, like, you leave Friday, like, I'll leave Friday morning at, like, the crack of, like, pre-dawn even, mm-hmm. to get there. And then I'm driving back Sunday to be back in Peterborough. At least this was, like, pre-pandemic, mm-hmm. When I physically had to be in Peterborough. And, you know, I try to spend most of my time in Peterborough. I think it's right that if you're representing a place, you should mm-hmm. be there. Mm-hmm. So even when, you know, the max that I would leave is like for a week to go and see them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't get to see them super often. The last time I was there was in February. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know when next time, but I'm hoping in June. Both my parents have birthdays in June, so I'll probably go up and see them at some point then. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope that works out. And I guess in the future, that might be a bit of an easier thing for you to do, too. So,
yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm getting from your website that, you know, one day when maybe perhaps around November or close to it, you'll start saying what your future plans are. And I want you to do that on your own terms. Don't worry. But am I correct in saying that you still, like, because you said this earlier in our conversation, that you will always be an activist? You are still going to be in an activist role in some sense.
Oh, 100%.
Yes. And is it going to go just, will it go beyond New Canadian Center?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is just a comment. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but I can't see you not taking some part of that anyway, if not all of it, being something involved with helping... you know, keep us all alive, our environment.
Or
some sort of environmental kind of, yes.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing with anything that you are an activist about, mm-hmm. Everything intersects with each other, right? So if mm-hmm. your focus can be newcomers, and environment and climate change impacts that, because we're starting to see people who, even though there is not an economic, or sorry, even though there isn't a climate stream of immigrating to Canada, we are starting to see people leaving their home countries because of climate change. And they're relocating because it's no longer tenable for them to live there, or they can foresee that in 10 years, it's not going to be a great place to live. So they're moving to Peterborough. So, your thing could be housing. Same thing. Climate change is going to affect that. So anyone who's not thinking about climate change, I think is not thinking, and it's going to affect us, you know, in different ways, but it doesn't matter which sector you're in or what kind of, whatever you're advocating for, climate change and the environment has to be a part of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll be looking forward to that. And I actually, yes. Wish you all the best. Well, I am quite saddened you're not running for re-election. And I take it you want to play no role whatsoever in 2022's election?
Well, no, that's not true. Okay. I've written to the Integrity Commissioner to find out what I'm allowed, like how involved I'm allowed to be in the upcoming municipal election. Because I don't want to be, I don't want to do something that's illegal or, mm-hmm. you know, against our code of conduct or whatnot. So I'm waiting to hear back from him as to, you know, to what degree I'm allowed to be involved, and if he's like, there's no limits, then yeah, by gosh, you will be hearing from me.
Oh, that's, don't you worry. Oh, that's good to hear. Okay. Yeah. So it's really just a change of role somewhat then. Yes.
Yeah. 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 I'm essentially going back to my role as being as an activist, as a constituent. I'm not going to be the face, you know, but, will I still be watching those boring meetings? 100%.
Okay. Well, you're better than I am. I was trying to do it for a few months back in, like the peak of our COVID period, somewhere in 2020 or 2021, but it's just, I couldn't do it after a while. Yeah. It's just, like it goes on forever, like
oh my god, do they ever. And yes. Sometimes I'm like, good lord, it's like, yes. Can we just vote?
Yeah, I know.
yeah.
Anyway, well, it's been very pleasurable talking to you. Thank you very much for this. I know you're a Liverpool fan, so that's great.
You a Liverpool fan? Like, do you watch English?
No, I don't think I've ever admitted this on my show before. I don't think so. No. Even with my conversation with Rob Jenkins, but, I think I'm the only Bundesliga fan in Peterborough.
Oh.
Definitely the only Schalke fan in Peterborough. So yes.
I think you are.
Yes.
Yeah. I occasionally will watch Bundesliga.
But I do have a lot of admiration for Jurgen Klopp, though. I do.
Yes.
That's a lot of energy to the team. And yes.
Yes, he does.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I definitely did. She's quite the kind of mind and kind of person that we need in this community. She has an idea of how things should be done, not just in Peterborough, but on a societal level as well, and the great beyond. Kemi Acapo, if every politician were like her, I guess all would end up not staying in it like her, because they'd realize the system is quite weird in Canada, this parliamentary democracy thing where the minority often end up winning. I know it isn't at a municipal level, but then you find the way now, thanks again, like what I say a lot in the interview, someone like Mike Harris, municipal level, you're quite limited, sadly. And it doesn't mean you're not given a lot of tasks, and people think you have all the power in the world, but you don't. Oh, well, that's maybe a dark way to end it, so I'll say that I loved it quite much, that interview. And, you know, I was complaining the last time that I just wasn't getting people to sign up. Well, kind of am now, as you can see. My last episode with Deadbeats wasn't that long ago. And there should be another one coming out soon. Again, look for us on Spotify and Apple, Corner of Hunter and George. And I will end here with just a few notes from her. Well, more than a few notes, but a bit of one artist she said she loved in town, who I hope to come into connection with soon myself, Evangeline Gentle. See you next time on Corner of Hunter and George.
I never saw this coming. You were electrified and stunning. Caught you in the bedroom humming. You were shy, lovely, you were something.